Well, hello, all you comic book fans out there in podcast land. Welcome to the first ever podcast of the Comics Dispatch.
Here at comicattack.net, produced through comicattack.net radio. My name is Andy Legal. I will be your host along with...
Daniel Fabrizio.
My good buddy. We both work at a comic shop together out in L.A. But this is, like I said, this is our first ever podcast here of the Comics Dispatch. And what our show is going to be is we're going to bring you the hottest and most relevant news that was announced in the past week in the comics world. And if you like what you hear, definitely tune in. We're going to be doing it weekly. And also check out the other stuff at comicattack.net radio, like our review podcast, which is called Tales from the Water Cooler. And we also do some interviews as well, most notably the ones through Decapitated Dan's Deep Discussions, where he'll interview a writer and artist. And yeah, definitely give him a download, give him a listen. And if you like what you hear, check out the site, comicattack.net, and keep coming back for more. So on our first show here, we've got a full menu to be sure. We're going to start out talking about the new direction of Captain America and a new Marvel miniseries that was announced, bringing in some old-school characters back to the foreground. Then we're going to switch gears, go into DC, talk a little Green Lantern, talk some Supergirl, and a DC character who's been very popular lately is also making his return to comics. Then we're also going to talk about some of the Eisners, which were announced this year, the Eisner Award nominees. And then to close out the show, we're bringing on a special guest for you guys. We're going to talk some Ninja Turtles. IDW announced that they're going to be rebooting the line. So we're bringing on a special guest who's been doing some amazing Ninja Turtles art. He's not attached to anything IDW, I don't think, but I just came across his stuff and he's a Turtles fan. And we want to bring him on. So let's get going. Daniel, Captain America. Stuff's about to change, starting with issue 620, right?
It definitely seems that way.
Yeah, starting with issue 620, the series is going to be called Captain America and Bucky, and it's going to be co-written now by Ed Brubaker and Mark Andreyko, with art by Chris Samnee. I guess one thing that's definitely worth noting is that the price is going to drop from $3.99 to $2.99, which I guess is cool. Marvel said they were going to be doing that. But basically this series is focusing on this. What was Cap like in the early days before World War II started? That's going to be the central focus, but it's also going to be tying into Fear itself somehow, according to Ed Brubaker. So what do you think of this, Daniel?
Now, is this a spoiler that, you know, Captain's coming or Steve is coming back to the Shield? Is that what I'm understanding from what I read about?
Well, I think this takes place in the past, right?
So they're renaming it Captain America and Bucky, but Bucky's still Cap, right?
I mean, I think in the main ongoing series, he's still Cap so far. I mean, they've been hinting that, you know, Steve Rogers is maybe going to be donning the shield once more, as we've been reading. But I think this series, the way it's reading, it's like it's going to be untold World War II stories.
Well, that's great. I mean, don't get me wrong. I like the whole Cap-Bucky dynamic, but how many of these are we going to get out? Like every other week I see a new Captain America title.
Well, I think that's coinciding with the movie, probably, right?
Yeah, I'm assuming it's to get more hype for the movie, but at the same time, how many more different stories can they tell?
Well, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, it seems like what they're saying is it's going to be focusing on unseen pieces of Bucky's history as well, which should be kind of cool. I mean, I don't know if it takes place a little bit after World War II, like what happened to Bucky before Winter Soldier, you know, that'd be kind of cool too. But I mean, yeah, like what exactly is going to be the focus? Like, yeah, how much more can we read about this time period, right?
Yeah, I'm hoping it'll get more people interested in the Bucky line, because I hear so many fans of Captain America don't like Captain America because it's not Steve Rogers at the moment.
See, that's funny, because a lot of fans I hear also like it because it isn't Steve Rogers, and they do like what they've done with Bucky and expanding his character. It's kind of like you either love it or you hate it, right?
Yeah, that's where it seems like it's going.
I mean, to me, too, this kind of seems like an obvious marketing ploy for Marvel, considering the movie is taking place during World War II. It only makes sense that, you know, they're providing a very, you know, easy jumping on point for new readers, something familiar to them. When they see the Captain America movie, they'll be, you know, associating Steve Rogers in World War II. Well, now if you want to pick up Captain America starting at issue 620, he'll be in World War II, right? So it's kind of ushering it in for them. It's kind of like what Marvel did in the early 2000s with the Ultimate line, you know, especially most notably X-Men, right? They slap them in leather outfits. Well, let's put out Ultimate X-Men where they're in leather outfits. It's visually appealing, you know, it strikes the new readers. Longtime fans aren't going to dump this series, I doubt it, right? Just because of this? Are you going to dump it?
No, I won't dump it, but I am going to be kind of curious. Is he going to get another spinoff line? Because, I mean, what's happening in the past is the past. What's happening now is what I want to know about.
That's a very good point. But, I mean, he says it ties into Fear itself, so maybe it's tying into, like, you know, some origin roots that come into play now. You know, it's kind of like, I mean, you read Fear Itself number one, right?
Yeah.
Spoiler if you haven't. I mean, the fact that they're bringing in the long-lost Allfather back, right? Like, who the hell saw that coming? Maybe it's something similar to that. But I'm all for a World War II Cap. I think the movie looks kind of sweet. I'm looking forward to it. I'm all for, you know, all about seeing Cap bust Nazi skulls. But I just hope this isn't, you know, just a rehash of stuff we've already seen, like you're saying. But another thing that's interesting, the series is co-written.
Yeah.
Wonder why. I mean, Brubaker's been having his hand, you know, with Cap for years. Why now is it being co-written? I don't know. Any thoughts on that?
I'm thinking that they're going to have to break off Steve and Bucky, and maybe Mark's going to get Bucky, and he's going to have to write his whole character.
Now that'd be interesting. I'd be all about a Bucky series, to be honest with you, as long as it took place today.
Yeah, I don't.
Basically, it already is a Bucky series, right? Captain America is Bucky's series.
Yeah, it is a Bucky series at the moment, but people are outraged.
Yeah. Well. All right, so what's your final verdict on this? Sounds cool. You gonna what do you think?
I'll keep an open mind about it. How about that? Is that an option?
That's an option. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Actually, if it's done right, it's got cool art. I like World War II Cap. I just hope it doesn't suck. And Brubaker, I trust. Okay, so moving on. Let's talk about this new 3-issue miniseries Marvel recently announced, bringing back some obscure characters that are mutants, or are they mutants? I'm not sure anymore. But they have some ties to the X-Men, and they announced this week that there is going to be a 3-issue Cloak and Dagger miniseries coming out. And it will be written by Nick Spencer. I was thinking Scott Snyder. It will be written by Nick Spencer, who, of course, writes Morning Glories, Infinite Vacation, Thunder Agents over at DC. But at Marvel, he's writing Iron Man 2.0. And the art is going to be by Emma Rios, who is currently doing the Osborn miniseries over at Marvel. Not a lot of details were released about this, other than just Cloak and Dagger coming back. Quick 3-issue stint. Apparently, it will be tying in with Spider-Man. Moving on, shifting gears, let's get out of the Marvel penthouse for a second and go to Green Lantern and DC. WonderCon, they released the new Green Lantern trailer, which was okay. I don't know, what are your thoughts on that, Daniel?
It was definitely better than that teaser that they put out, what was that, maybe 6 months ago or so?
Yeah, that's not saying much, though.
Okay. It actually made me kind of excited to go see this movie.
Yeah?
And I'm a Lantern fan. I'm a huge Lantern fan, but I'm more of a Guy Gardner guy.
Yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, dude. I really don't think this movie is going to hold up to all the hype. It still looks like a really good video game to me. That's all I can think. Like, I can't think beyond video game cutscenes. I don't know. It looked cool. I just don't think it's going to compare to Thor and Captain America. I think those look awesome. I think Green Lantern looks okay.
I just don't believe Reynolds is a good choice for Hal Jordan. I find that difficult to find.
Why is that?
His demeanor, as we all know, he is a Deadpool fan. He is more of a Flash or a Kyle Rayner. He is not a Hal Jordan.
Okay. Why do you think that, though? Because of his jovial personality?
Yeah, his goofy personality, his witty... I won't say witty. How about his stylish jokes?
Okay. But, yeah. Did you see... You saw that fan trailer of Nathan Fillion as Hal Jordan?
Yes.
That would have been awesome.
That he would have been an amazing Hal Jordan. I have to agree.
I mean, I don't want to just, you know, bash on Reynolds before we even see the movie. I'm sure he'll do a good job, but the scene that just kills me, and I think everybody I've talked to about this trailer that has one thing they don't like about it, it always comes down to this one thing, and it's when he gets the suit on and he's like, oh yeah, whatever he does, right? I just hate that. Hal Jordan, I understand back, you know, when he first appeared, he was that guy. But Hal Jordan today is not that guy. Hal Jordan today is this collected, calculated, get the job done military man. And that's what I want to see. I want to see that Green Lantern. I don't know. It looks cool. Oh, it looks exactly like Coruscant to me. They just like seriously, that it's obvious where that was inspired from.
Yeah.
All in all, like, I'm going to give it a shot. I think you're right. It does look better than the little teaser trailer that we had. But I don't know. I still have a lot left to be desired. Like, I want more.
I think you're right when you're saying, like, Nathan Fillion. Or I'll throw a wild card out there and say the voice of Green Lantern in The New Frontier, David Boreanaz. I think he would have been a better choice for Hal Jordan.
Really?
He has that serious demeanor. We've seen it in Angel and everything. We know he can be comical but serious in like Bones. I think that he would have been a better choice.
Hmm. Well, I mean, he still has a chance to wow us. You know, we haven't seen it yet. But you're just talking aesthetically and maybe like what we've heard so far.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't know, are they going to be playing off of Geoff Johns' version of Green Lantern? Do we have any idea on that one yet?
Well, from what I've been able to deduce, it's going to be based off of the Secret Origins graphic novel.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, your standard Green Lantern lore will be in there, but, I mean, you saw the cover to the new printing?
Yeah, I saw it.
Yeah, it's the movie cover. I hate that, by the way. Ugh. I mean, it's cool now, but, like, once the movie's out, those covers with the actors on them just look awful, I think, once the movie's done. It's like, give me a nice piece of artwork, you know?
Yeah.
All right, so let's talk about the other Green Lantern news that came out this week. DC announces War of the Green Lanterns Aftermath. If you're reading DC right now or any Green Lantern, you know that the current... storyline that's passing through Green Lantern, Green Lantern Corps, and Green Lantern Emerald Warriors is the War of the Green Lanterns. And the general gist is Krona, who's a long-lost guardian who played with emotion and got exiled for it. He's pissed, and he's back with a vengeance, and he has control of all the Lantern Color entities. And basically what he's done is he's had Parallax infect the Green Lantern battery. So anyone who hasn't previously been possessed by Parallax is now essentially under Krona's control. So that leaves a very short list of people on the safe list, in the safe zone, and that includes Guy Gardner, Kyle Rayner, Hal, Kilowog, and Ganthet. Am I missing anybody?
John Stewart?
John Stewart, right. And him. My favorite Green Lantern.
And you forgot him.
I know. Well, he hasn't been used at all in comics lately, which pisses me off, but that's another discussion. But so apparently they're teasing that in this aftermath, maybe one of these major lanterns is going to die. What do you think about that?
How big of news would that be? I don't think they'll do it to Hal or Guy, since they're running their own stories, but there are currently two major Green Lanterns in Core.
That's true. You got Kyle and John, right?
So who's to say not one of them's not taken out? I mean, we see it in the most recent issue of Core. They don't like each other.
If it's John, I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be so pissed. They've done nothing with him. He did He did a little. What did he do in Blackest Night? He like fought off a bunch of Black Lanterns briefly and all by himself, which was cool. But he's been like, there's been nothing done with Jon Stewart since Geoff Johns took over. Right.
I guess he's the lantern that's on the back burner. Who knows? This could be the return to prominence of Jon Stewart.
Well, I know Peter Tomasi is writing him in Core and stuff, but so I can't entirely fault Geoff Johns, but like, he's such an awesome character. He's a military-minded guy. Like, I wanted in Blackest Night, I really wanted to see him lead like some sort of a assault force to go do something, and that was never explored. I don't know. I hope it's not him. I don't like Kyle, so I'd be okay with him going.
But see, what I was gathering from the last issue of Core is Kyle's the major player. Jon Stewart's the Robin to his Batman, I guess.
Which is bullshit. It should not be that way. Not only has Jon Stewart been around far longer, he's a military guy. What's Kyle?
Isn't he like a sketch artist or something like that?
Exactly. Exactly. I remember, I think it was in maybe Green Lantern Rebirth. I'm not sure. I think it was Green Lantern Rebirth when Hal Jordan first comes back and all the other Lanterns are like fighting alongside him for something. I don't remember. It's been a while. But Kyle, his construct is an eraser, a giant a number two pencil, and he's like erasing the bad guy with the eraser. And he's like sitting back in like a thinking pose. I'm like, what the hell is this? Give me Jon Stewart to create a bunch of freaking semi-automatics and some F-16s and blow some shit up.
See, but the picture for that teaser, it's just blood on a Green Lantern ring. What's to say not one of them doesn't turn towards the Red Lanterns?
Well, that's an interesting take. Obviously, it'd be Guy Gardner.
Would it be Guy? I mean, he is already infected by the Red Lantern. But what's to say it's not one of the other ones? I mean, as we all know, the emotional spectrum can affect everyone.
It's true. Well, another thing they say in this in the press release I was reading about this storyline is that Geoff Johns wants to return the core focus of the Green Lantern stories to these four Lanterns: Hal, Guy, Jon, and Kyle, the dudes from Earth. He wants it to be more about them now, and it almost sounds like he's apologizing or admitting that he's kind of gotten away from them with all these big events that have been going on in the Green Lantern books, Blackest Night, Brightest Day, now this, War of the Green Lanterns, and he wants to start focusing more on these four characters, which I think is already happening, definitely, with Hal and Guy. Kyle, to a lesser extent, definitely not John. So, you know, maybe one of them gets turned. Who knows, right? What are you thinking? Are you looking forward to this?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it. I've enjoyed the artwork. The stories have been promising. I've loved Emerald Warrior since it first started. So I'm going to continue this, and hopefully we'll see what happens, and I'm hoping it'll have, like, the big twist at the very end.
What? Like, what kind of thing? What do you mean?
Like, one of them, they're not killed, but they end up turning towards a different power.
Well, if that happens, I just hope they go for full bore with it and don't, like, make it like a flash in the pan thing. For example, one thing that pissed me off the most out of Blackest Night is when all those guys got deputized and then they, like, lost the ring somehow. I thought that was going to be, like, the new direction for these characters. Like, you know, Scarecrow's now part of the Sinestro Corps. Lex Luthor has the orange ring. You know, all, like, Wonder Woman, she's now Star Sapphire. Like, I wanted to see at least maybe one or two of those characters stay.
See, you know? the thing I didn't understand about Blackest Night is Ganthet is an honorary Green Lantern, so isn't he also a Blue Lantern now?
Yeah. He's kind of everything, right?
Yeah, I'm kind of confused on what the hell he's doing.
Yeah, and he was just kind of like, oh, I'll hold the back. I don't know, I like Ganthet. I think he's cool. I want to see what happens with him, to be honest with you. I like him. He's one of the few Guardians who's like, F this. We got to make the galaxy better. But all in all, though, I'm looking forward to this. I hope War of the Green Lanterns ends on a high note and isn't just like a, oh, really? Kind of thing. Geoff Johns kind of lost me a little bit. I'm not going to lie. These last few Green Lantern issues. I'm still enjoying it, don't get me wrong, but it just seems like it's just almost too much. He's following a big event with a big event, and I don't like that. I like a little cool down. But, okay, moving on. Staying in the DC Universe, though. Superman fans, this one's for you. Supergirl, get this. Supergirl is going to high school. Nope, college. She's going to college. How exciting is that? Man, doesn't it make you just want to pick up that book? Read about Supergirl in college?
Oh, it's so amazing. Maybe if it was Supergirl and her sorority adventures.
Right? Well, you know, there is a potential upside to this. I'm a fan of when writers can get in a character's head and, you know, give us a story that's about the character and not necessarily about the character punching stuff. Basically, this is going to be a 3-issue storyline, and it's going to be written by Kelly Sue DeConnick, who is currently writing Osborn right now. We just talked about that mini with the artist. And she also wrote the Sif one-shot that came out a little while ago. Osborn, are you reading Osborn?
I am reading Osborn, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's weird, right? Like, it's not, I don't want to say it's bad, but it's really wordy, almost to the point of preachy. And it's just, Osborn's almost being depicted as like a comedic character, which I don't like.
He's not only being depicted as a comedic character, but it seems like he's being depicted as a comedic messiah.
Yeah, like he's like very like tongue-in-cheek, and he doesn't seem like the cold, calculated Osborn of before. Like this Osborn's making speeches, and I kind of get it too. Like that miniseries is more about Nora Winters, the journalist over at the Daily Bugle, but it's called Osborn, and I don't know if the Tonics got the depiction of Osborn that Bendis has left us with after Siege.
Because so, I'm more interested in the other convicts that Osborn broke out.
Right, and those, like the spider guy and the weird chick and all those two other dudes, who I can't remember what they were exactly. But yeah, I mean, they're cool, but again, like, the whole setup for that was they're putting Osborn in this prison underneath the water to keep him, you know, isolated. But then they put him in a prison or in a cell with 5 other insanely powerful, corrupt metahumans. And it's like, how the hell did you expect this to turn out? Obviously, Osborn's getting out.
Yeah. I mean, I like Supergirl. In recent issues, she's actually been better off than the main Kryptonian title.
I agree. I definitely agree. I think Supergirl's been very, very well written lately. It's right now it's all about that storyline where you can download an app and there's like a cam on superheroes. So you can watch like superheroes in action. I think that's a cool storyline. And I'm liking Supergirl right now. Seeing her back in college, I don't know. Obviously, I'm going to give it a shot. I've actually kind of become a mild Supergirl fan. I love her team-ups with Damian. I think they're hilarious. But DeConnick as a writer still has to win me over. By the way, artwork in this 3-issue storyline is going to be by Chris Cross and Mark Deering. But she's not taking over the book for good. So it's just she's kind of popping in and then popping out. I hope she can... Here's what I don't want. I just don't want this to be a 3-issue... goofy thing that when it's done it has absolutely no relevance to the character. Like something needs to happen to her for me to like walk away pleased.
Here's the thing, how can you make a 3-issue series about somebody going to college? Is she waiting in line for the student registry or something for a full issue?
Maybe it's just her interaction with other people. Like I don't know, I just hope it doesn't feel like the storylines come out of nowhere. I just hope it actually has like a good place with the Supergirl book. You gonna check it out?
I'll check it out, mainly because I'm a Kryptonian fan.
I'm not a huge Kryptonian fan, but I'm gonna check it out anyway. I honestly want to see how DeConnick wraps up Osborn, and I want to see what she's going to do with a teenage female character as opposed to, you know, a late 30s, early 40s sociopath. So I'm definitely going to check it out. Sticking with DC, but moving on, Daniel, one of your favorite characters, is going to be returning to comics.
I'm so excited.
Yes. Starting with Batman and Robin, number 23, Judd Winnick is going to take over writing duties for a little while, and he's going to bring back the Red Hood. Daniel, you want to tell us a little bit about this? What you read in that in the little blurb about it?
Basically, what happened was Judd Winnick had written in so many stories about the Red Hood, he was bound to come back. Apparently, he's being broken out of a prison transfer. And it's not by who you would expect. It's not villains breaking him out. It could possibly be Batman and Robin.
Yeah, Batman, Dick Grayson, Batman.
Yeah, Batman, Dick Grayson, Batman. We better clarify that. So many Batman running around now, it's not funny.
And they're making it sound like Jason Todd, as the Red Hood, is going to be teaming up with Grayson and Wayne, Damian Wayne.
How awesome would it be if he finally break through to Jason and get him to turn more towards the side of good, or towards the side of not killing people? He is on the side of good.
Yeah, honestly, though, I like that about the Red Hood. I like that he's like, Batman's way doesn't work. You need to eliminate the menace.
See,
I mean, yeah, go ahead.
The thing I can't understand is when Bruce returns, he talks about a Batman from the shadows. Who is a better Batman from the shadows than Jason Todd? It wasn't Azrael, that's for sure.
Yeah. Pick your incarnation, it wasn't Azrael. Man, I just think Jason Todd's... That six-issue miniseries, what was it called again?
It wasn't Under the Red Hood. It was The Red Hood, The Lost Days.
Yes, that was awesome. And that, if you haven't read that miniseries, by the way, it's also written by Winnick with art by Jeremy Hahn, who's a great artist. That miniseries was all about what happened to Jason Todd after the Joker, quote-unquote, killed him, to his return as the Red Hood. It filled in the gaps. He got trained by Talia. She kind of took on a mother role to him. Ra's al Ghul warned against it. He learned the fighting ways of an assassin, and then he kind of just broke off on his own. And, you know, he's delivered vigilante justice lethally. Dude, I cannot wait to see him interact with Dick and Damian, like, but working together. Like, because you got to look at it this way. Todd was the guy who replaced Dick Grayson. There's got to be some sort of, like...
There's got to be some bad blood.
Yeah, like some, like... like sibling rivalry times 100, right? and then you toss in Damian, who's just gonna give him shit the whole time. Like, he's not gonna... Damian's a little bastard, you know? Like, he's not just gonna like kick back and take orders from Todd, you know, or let him do it. Although Damian is a little more brutal too. I mean, maybe he'll subscribe to Todd's methods.
If Todd turns back towards the lighter side, and his Robin becomes Damian, and then Tim comes back to be Dick's Robin.
I don't think Tim would be subordinate to Dick in that way. I think they work more in tandem than, you know, I'm beneath you kind of thing. But I'd love to see a Grayson Drake team up.
That would be amazing.
Yeah, but so in here, let's see. Yeah, and I got to give props to Judd Winnick too. Like, that dude, he's been doing good stuff with Red Hood. Like, I really am interested to see where he takes this character and what he does with this mishmash of characters. Sweet. So look for that. Batman and Robin, number 23. All right, stepping away from Marvel and DC now, we are going to talk about the Will Eisner Awards, which have been announced earlier this week, earlier last week, rather. And what the Eisner Awards are, if you don't know, they're essentially the Oscars of the comic book world. And the winners are announced at San Diego Comic-Con, which is in July. And basically what we're going to do here on the Comics Dispatch is we're going to discuss a few categories and nominations each week leading up to the Eisners. We may finish a little before they're announced, or a little bit before Comic-Con. But if not, hey, we've got a lot to talk about. So the first three categories we're going to talk about are Best Short Story, Best Single Issue or One-Shot, and the Best Continuing Series. Starting with the Best Short Story, the nominees are Bart on the 4th of July by Peter Cooper in Bart Simpson number 54, Batman in Trick for the Scarecrow by Billy Tucci in DCU's Halloween Special 2010. Cinderella by Nick Spencer and Rodin Escuejo in Fractured Fables. Sorry if I butcher some of these names. Hamburgers for One by Frank Stockton in Pop Gun Volume 4. Little Red Riding Hood by Brian Talbot and Camila de Errico in Fractured Fables. And lastly is Post Mortem by Greg Rucka and Michael Lark in I Am an Avenger number 2. Daniel, have you read any of these?
I believe I've read Batman and the Trick for the Scarecrow.
Was it good?
It was good. It was just part of the little Halloween compendium of stories. I've always loved the Scarecrow, though, so I always felt like he was kind of shortchanged in the Christopher Nolan movies. I know he had a main part, but I was hoping for more. There's so many more ways that Scarecrow tortures people.
Yeah, I liked him as a member of the Sinestro Corps War, because fear is his weapon, and it's all about fear. But about these short stories, yeah, I'm not going to lie to you, I've not read one of them, so I can't even comment. But those are the nominees for Best Short Story. next is Best Single Issue or One-Shot. The nominees are The Cape by Joe Hill and Jason Ciara Mela and Zach Howard, published by IDW. Fables number 100 by Bill Willingham and Mark Buckingham and a bunch of other people, published by Vertigo. Hellboy Double Feature of Evil by Mike Mignola and Richard Corbin, published by Dark Horse. Lock and Key, Keys to the Kingdom number 1 by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez, published by IDW. And lastly, Unknown Soldier number 21 by Joshua Dysart and Rick Veitch, published by Vertigo. Daniel, you read any of these?
I've read the Fables number 100. Actually, that was the very first Fables book I picked up on your recommendation.
Ah, well, what'd you think?
It got me hooked into the Fables universe. My fiance, she's a huge Grimm Fairy Tales fan. So I always felt those were a little bit too corny for my style. So picking up Fables, that was right up my alley. But overall, it got me engrossed into a new world of comics.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the Grimm Fairy Tales comparison. Don't get me wrong, I mean, that has its audience. It's cool. But Fables is a little more story-driven. It's a little deeper, too. Actually, not a little. It's a lot deeper. There's many more layers. I mean, the idea of fairy tale characters living in our present day, I mean, Bill Willingham definitely does his research. Of all these nominees, that's actually the only one that I read. I heard good things about The Cape. Obviously, Hellboy has its fan base, as does Lock and Key. Unknown Soldier, glad to see it there. I tried to read the first volume, and honestly, it really didn't click with me. Didn't think it was bad, per se, but I don't know. But I've heard it gets amazing beyond that. So I'll give it a shot. But again, I just got to echo you, Fables 100. I thought it was a great issue. I definitely think it's deserving to be nominated for an Eisner. I mean, it got you hooked, and that's kind of the point of those anniversary issues, is obviously to provide, you know, kind of blockbuster feel for the ongoing readers, but also to be an introductory point for people that are new. Okay, so next is Best Continuing Series. We could probably say a little more on these. Nominees are Chew by John Layman and Rob Gilroy, published by Image. Echo by Terry Moore, published by Abstract Studios. Lock and Key by Joe Hill and Gabriel Rodriguez, published by IDW. Morning Glories by Nick Spencer and Joe Eisma, published by Image. Naoki Urasawa's 20th Century Boys by Naoki Urasawa, published by Viz Media. And Scalped by Jason Aaron and R.M. Guerra, published by Vertigo. Let's just take these one by one, talk about them. Let's talk about Chew. Obviously, it's great. The humor, the story, just the whole direction of this book. I mean, it's the best dark comedy on the shelves right now, I would say. How about you, Daniel?
I'll agree with that to an extent. It's definitely one of the best. I won't say it is the best, but it is definitely.
What dark comedy do you like better?
I always find that Proof always makes me laugh. For some weird reason, it always makes me laugh.
That's not a comedy.
To me, it is a comedy. I see so many parodies in it. How about that?
But they're not eating Cheez-Its in Proof. They're eating Cheez-Its in Chew, you know what I mean? Like, the whole thing with the bird flu. You got a gay cyborg guy. Like, I mean, I don't know. I think Chew's deserving. You think it's deserving of an Eisner nominee?
Looking at this list, every one of these is deserving. So
yeah, I agree.
I can't argue with it.
Let's talk about Terry Moore's Echo. Are you reading that?
I'm reading that in trade. I am up to volume 2.
Okay.
I love how Terry Moore writes the books.
Yeah, what he's doing with Echo, he's almost writing a superhero book without it being a superhero book. I love the story. Everyday kind of woman gets caught in this situation she didn't ask to be in, gets power she didn't ask for, and now she's the number one target of the government. Now they're kind of on the run, and they find out that there's something going on much bigger than them with apocalyptic, you know, potential results. And it's up to her to save the day. And the series is almost over. It's only got a couple issues left, but it's written and drawn by Terry Moore. And honestly, this would be my number 2 on this list. I just love it. Like, it's probably one of the most beautiful indie comics that is out there right now. And I say that not only in terms of art, because the art is beautiful, but he's just written just a concise, well-told story. You're only 2 volumes in, Daniel, but things are about to get amazing in that book for you. And I highly recommend checking it out. If you've got a girl and you want to get her into comics, give her Echo. Seriously, spend $15 on volume 1. She will be hooked. Terry Moore is known as the dude getting chicks into comics. Try it out, man. Anything to say about Echo?
No, that you pretty much summed it up.
Cool. Lock and Key. Are you reading Lock and Key?
I am not reading Lock and Key. I picked up a couple issues. It's not because I don't like it. It's because it's one of those stories that it's not in my normal.
Yeah, it's horror. Decapitated Dan on our site loves Lock and Key. If you want to check out some reviews, just type in our search bar Lock and Key and Dan will have some there for you. Like I said, I read volume 1. I liked it. I don't know why. I just haven't kept reading it. I only hear good things, though, again. Like, I heard it's consistently strong, but I can't really comment beyond that because I've only read volume 1. So, all right, moving on. Morning Glories. What's your take on Morning Glories, Daniel?
The writing in it is fantastic.
See, what do you like about the writing?
It seems like he has a real good grasp on these characters. He develops them well. The story, although it's not completely original, it's one that you don't hear a whole lot of. It's not a superhero story. The faculty with slightly younger kids in a boarding school.
Yeah, see, I think Morning Glories deserves to be on this list in the sense that it's kind of revitalized Image's indie scene. Like, Chew kind of paved the way, and then Morning Glories kind of put the nail in the coffin in a good way. But, dude, I like Morning Glories. What the fuck is going on in that book? We are, what, 8 issues in, and I still don't know what the hell is going on. I like it. It's good. I keep coming back, but I need some explanations. Like, why are they there? Why are these kids agreeing to this? Like, why? Like, I'm sorry, but these are, you know, what are they, like, 18, 19, 20, somewhere in there? And, you know, they're surrounded by death and all this violence, and they're just like, oh, okay, yeah, sure, I'm okay with this, I'm down. What the fuck? I'd be like, holy shit, what the hell is going on? Why are these people coveting me? What's my importance? And I don't know, I just, like I said, I'm loving Nick Spencer's Thunder Agents. I'm looking forward to seeing what he's going to do in Cloak and Dagger. Infinite Vacation is sweet, but I don't know if Morning Glories deserves to be on here based on it, just merit alone. The art's all right, but it can get a little wonky at times. Obviously, Chicks and Skirts is going to sell, but I don't know. I think it's a little premature for it to be on here. I mean, look at all these other series that are nominated. You got Chew, which is on issue 17, 18. Echo's on issue 28. Lock and Key's on its 3rd or 4th volume. 20th Century Boys is well into a few volumes already. Scalped is on issue 40-something. Then you have Morning Glories, which is only issue 8, and it's nominated for an Eisner already. I don't know. I don't know if it deserves to be on this list. 20th Century Boys, I can't really say much on. Haven't read it. It's manga. but Chris, our manga reviewer on comicattack.net, she's reviewed many a volume of 20th Century Boys. So if you want to read more about it, definitely add it to the search bar and give her reviews a read. So our last nominee here, and then we'll wrap up our Eisner coverage for this week, and we'll continue next week with some more categories. But the last book that is nominated is Scalped by Jason Aaron and R.M. Guerra, published by Vertigo. Daniel, you just started reading Scalped. I made you read it. What do you think?
Every issue seems like a one-shot, but there's still enough of the central story to keep rounding it about, and you're getting like all these sub-stories in it all at once.
Yeah, and every issue seems like a one-shot to you because it has been. You're at a point right now in the story where Jason Aaron's moved away from like a six-issue storyline or like a large storyline, and he's basically shining the spotlight on minor characters we've seen throughout the book, and he's giving us more depth to them. So that's kind of why to you it seems like a one-shot, because it has been. But if you've been reading the series from the beginning, it's really just more expansion on characters we already know. This would be my pick. If I were to vote for best continuing series, Echo would be a close two, Chew would be three, Scalped would be number one. No doubt about it. It is the first book I read. Jason Aaron, holy shit. The story he is telling here, it's gritty, it's dark, but at the same time, it's incredibly amazing and engaging. There is a protagonist in this book in the sense that there's a main character, but there is no protagonist in the sense that there's no real good guy. Every character has a flaw. Every character has a damning fault to them that is almost borderline irredeemable. And because of that, man, the fact that Jason Aaron is able to write characters like this and you still care about them, like, you just enjoy reading them going through this punishment, but at the same time you feel their pain and you're just like, oh my God, what the fuck? This is so awful, but I can't stop reading. It's like an amazing train wreck, just like oozing guts and blood. Like, that's this book, and it's so good. It started out being just about one or two characters, and as you keep reading it, with each volume, with each storyline, the cast just keeps expanding, and you realize it's more about this Indian reservation where everything takes place, and man, Jason Aaron is just nailing this book. This would be my pick, hands down.
Echo, Scalped, Chew, in that order.
Yeah, I'd go Scalped, Echo, Chew. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for our Eisner coverage. Again, we've got plenty more to talk about with that, so definitely tune back in as we discuss. We'll probably go on to, let's see what's next, best limited series, best new series, best publication for kids. We'll take it from there. All right, so in our final segment for our first show, we have with us Dave Raposa, who is doing some fucking amazing Ninja Turtles portraits. He's selling some of them. He's got prints. They're very limited. There's a very limited run, though, so you kind of got to get your order in soon. But he's a huge Turtles fan, and recently, this past week, IDW announced that they are going to be rebooting the TMNT franchise. Not only are they going to be doing a new series, but they're also going to be reprinting all the old stuff, which is sweet, because that stuff has been pretty hard to get lately. So with us is Dave. Say hey, Dave.
Hey, everybody. yeah, I love Ninja Turtles, but, you know, I don't know if I'm going to be feeling the new comic. I read up the thing you sent me, but, yeah, I don't know. And I always get kind of, like, turned off by that stuff, the rehash and, like, bringing it back. You know what I'm saying?
Right. I mean, this press release was kind of confusing, too. I mean, basically what they say is they're going to be doing a new ongoing Turtles series in the vein of the original series. That's their wording. They say original series. And then they use terms like Heroes in a Half Shell and Cowabunga Dudes. And it's like, wait a second. That wasn't the original series. That was when the cartoon took over and Archie took over the comic run. So what is this exactly, right?
Yeah, that's like, I don't know. It just kind of like turns me off to it because you see like a, like, it reminds me, like, they're saying they're huge fans. Like, I don't know who's doing it. But if they're like around my age or something, you know, where they grew up with it, and they were a huge fan, that's kind of worse to me. Like, you know when the original comes out and you're looking at it and it's new, but it's cool because the guys who released it didn't know it was cool. You know what I mean?
Right.
So you have like these new people coming in who like already know everything and they have this idea in their head, but it's not the same as if like, you know, you get new different ideas that are cool because the people who are doing it are just kind of like, you know, they thought it was like a joke at first. And then they just like create cool stuff to go with it. But I mean, it's like they're not, you know what I mean? They're not like 100% invested in the universe at first. So it's kind of like pulled from all these different places as opposed to being like an inbred sort of thing.
Yeah. And actually, it kind of, you mentioned it was a joke. It kind of was at first. Wasn't it a take on Ronin?
Yeah. And I read the whole thing about how they like ripped off. I mean, they like took a lot of their stuff from Daredevil.
Yeah. I mean, that's very evident, too, when you read the original Black and Whites. I don't know, Daniel, what's your take on this?
First of all, I'm going to have to agree with Dave. I was a huge fan growing up. They brought back 2003. They rebrought the new animated series, and I turned it on one day, and I was like, what the hell is this? And
it wasn't that bad.
It was that bad. If you grew up with it, it was that bad.
But that animated series, that was like the Archie cartoon with a little more serious edge.
It had its serious edge. But then when I saw, what was it? I don't want to say Turtles in Time, but Turtles of the Multiverse. I can't remember the name of the movie. That was probably
Turtles 3.
No. It was an animated movie.
Oh, you're talking about Turtles Forever.
Yeah, Turtles Forever. That made me happy. I'm not gonna lie. That one made me happy to see.
Have you heard of that, Dave? Turtles Forever.
I haven't heard of that. This is the first time.
Was it
real popular, or was it just like? I mean, I'm guessing it was just straight.
This is what it was. It was essentially it was Mirage's like send off of the Turtles, right? Right before they sold them to Nickelodeon. And yeah. Basically what it is, it's an hour-long animated film, and what it does is it merges three generations of turtles together. Basically, the original Eastman and Laird turtles meet the 80s cartoon turtles, meet the 2003 reboot cartoon turtles.
So it's just a combination of all of them?
Yeah, but it's all three sets in one story. So it's like you've got like the Eastman and Laird turtles, like, looking at these other versions, like, look at these chumps, you know, like, who the fuck are these guys? And then you've got, like, our pizza-loving, you know, 1980s cartoon turtles being all ridiculous and stupid. And then, you know, there's the 2003 turtles, which are looking at them like, man, look at these idiots. But, you know, they're easily not as cool as the black and white guys. And they're in, like, Shredder's there from the cartoon, Krang is there, Bebop and Rocksteady, it's awesome.
Like, that sounds cool, but I mean, I don't know, that kind of reminds, I mean, like, I haven't seen it, so I'm not gonna just like rip on it, obviously, but that kind of reminds me of like when I went to see the newest X-Men movie.
Oh.
Where it was like, where he says like, I'm the juggernaut bitch and stuff, when it's self-aware, where they're like, I have a power and now I'm gonna use it so you know who I am, and it's like, fuck off. Like, that's so lame. And, like, I don't know. I hate when stuff becomes self-aware. Like, it's so cool that, I don't know, like, the original series, like, it's so serious and it's so stupid at the same time because it is Ninja Turtles. Like, they're ninja fucking turtles. Like, that's not a good idea. You know, like, on paper, that's so stupid. But because it's taken so seriously, it's like me watching, like, a... I don't know. It's like taking Hard Target with Van Damme seriously. It's just like so dumb, but it's so awesome because it's just like it knows it's cool even though it isn't. You know what I mean?
Dude, I totally get you. Luckily, though, I don't think you'll feel that way with Turtles Forever. I really don't.
I hope so.
Yeah, but that juggernaut bitch line, oh, I fucking hated that.
It was insane. I was like sitting there and I was like, I know some stupid asshole fanboy like wrote that in there and was like, this is a feature length fucking movie.
Yeah, and the worst part about like, it was, like, I don't know, did you watch what it references? I didn't even think it was that.
Yeah, I did.
It's lame, right? Like, it wasn't even that good.
Well, I mean, like, you take the entire length of the fucking, like, since the X-Men began, however many years ago that was. And then you throw in a modern pop culture reference to some fucking YouTube video online. It's like, what an asshole.
Yeah. and that's a very valid point. Like, this is what you're afraid of. You're afraid of this kind of thing encroaching on this new IDW series.
Yeah, exactly. I'm afraid of people who know the comics and they know the show. And, like, I would rather have some guy who's never heard of anything come in and just be like, you know, like, he had been in a cave for the past 20 years and just be like, can you do this Ninja Turtles thing? He's like, fuck Ninja Turtles. And they're like, well, try and make it cool any way you can think possible. Because he's like, it's not cool. I'll try and make it cool. And that's when you get good ideas as opposed to people who, like, love it and then find stuff within the universe to bring out. And, like, it just becomes, it's, you know, it's not as creative because they're constantly, like, working within the rules of the universe as opposed to making something new.
Which is, you know what I mean? Make.
Because if you're going to reinvent it, you might as well just make a new IP completely.
Yeah. I mean, one thing that I hold close to my heart with Turtles that got me into it was, yes, obviously the cartoon in the 1991 movie, which was fucking amazing, and I still think it's amazing to this day. Like, you could still watch it and be like, wow, that is a sweet fucking movie. But the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures series published by Archie. Did either of you guys ever read any issue of that?
I did not.
Yes.
You did?
I did. I mean, I used to read them because, I mean, like, it looked like the cartoon. So that was the first one I saw. I remember buying a few of them. I wasn't, like, super into it.
Okay, I read every single one. I'm that guy. I went to, like, I think it ended at, like, issue 70 or something like that. But what happens after, like, the first 20 issues, the dudes who wrote it and drew it, I don't even remember their names. That's so bad of me. But regardless, they actually started spinning a story that literally, like, flowed through each and every issue. It was like an actual comic series. And it got kind of, like, really badass. Like, they did these versions of the Turtles from the future where, like, Mikey and Leo got killed. So it was just Don and Raph. And Raph has, like, one eye because he was, like, in this battle with Slash. And Slash was...
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, and, like, Slash is in it. And they create, like, Cuddly the Cowlick, which is kind of stupid, but he's this cow head that flips around space and, like, licks him up and drops him on planets, and the Turtles are part of this, like, you know, universal kind of fucking wrestling league thing. Think Mojo World, but with the Turtles. I don't know. It was just really freaking cool. And then they created this character, Ninjara, who's, like, Raph's love interest, who's, like, she's literally a fox, but, like, a ninja fox.
But it's cool that you're saying that, because that's exactly the kind of stuff I'm talking about. Somebody who's a loyal fan of the Turtles would never, ever do that. They would never do that, like what you just said about, like, going into the future and doing all this shit, because they'd be like, no, that wouldn't happen. It's the Ninja Turtles. You know what I mean?
Right. But I would love somebody to take that Archie series and, like, kind of not continue it, you know, detach it from it, because it did have a kid vibe, of course.
Yeah.
But kind of, like, take that kind of theme with it, like, expand it, make it one great story that's going on, and introduce some new characters. They also had this, they also went to China a lot in that series. And there was this dude who could turn into a dragon. He's kind of like a Hulk. Like, when you get pissed off, you turn into this dragon and he turned bad. And, like, the Turtles had to fight this fucking dragon. Like, how do these Turtles fight a dragon, right? So, I mean, I would love to see that. But I'm a little confused. Like, this press release, like I said, like, it says it's going to be based on the original series, but then they use wording that makes you think otherwise. No creative team has been announced yet, so we don't even know who's doing it. But obviously, I'm going to read it. Are you going to check it out, Dave?
I might, but it better not be The Dark Knight starring fucking Ninja Turtles, because, and I just fuck off. I don't give a shit about that. Like, when they have to explain it, they're like, the ooze was created in this laboratory, blah, 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 and they go into, like, super detail about, like, why everything is everything. Like, I can believe the fantasy that fucking Teenage Ninja Turtles exist. I don't need you to explain it. Like, that whole Dark Knight thing that's popular now, it's just the worst.
How about you, Daniel? Are you going to check it out?
I'm going to check it out mainly because I have been lacking a good Turtles comic book, good cartoon. I recently just bought the four movies in the box set just so I could get my Turtle fix.
Yeah, Dave, what do you think of TMNT?
I mean, I'm coming from a point of view where, you know, like, I do that kind of stuff for a living. Like, I design and paint. I mean, like, I don't just do Ninja Turtles art. Like, I do stuff for, like, fantasy publications and movie stuff and all that. So, I mean, like, it's just bad design to me. Like, sure. I mean, like, the foot, you know, like, the Foot Clan just looked like shit to me. Like, it was too fast. It was too much going on. You know what I mean? I don't know. The style in general, it's just like I was saying before, just do something new. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you keep trying to reinvent it, you're never going to get the same success that they got in the beginning, because those guys had passion for what they were doing. These guys are just trying to do a job in the movie industry. You get, like, concept artists who work on these things, and I don't know, I'm bringing a different point of view to it, but, like, the concept artists who work on these things, a lot of them are, like, union-based jobs, so you get these guys who just don't really give a shit. And they do these poor designs, and it's just like, maybe if the two guys who own Ninja Turtles were, like, sitting there with them still in, the, like, you know, the 80s when they were excited to do it, and they were like, no, it's gonna look like this, it's gonna look like this, you know, and they were behind it and pushing it, but I mean, they probably don't give a shit. And it's just,
yeah,
like,
no, they definitely don't. Actually, I talked to Kevin Eastman at San Diego Comic-Con this past year, right when the Nickelodeon deal went down. Yeah. I was like, so Kevin, what do you think about this? Like, you don't control your creations anymore. And he's like, dude, whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's what I was thinking when I was seeing that stuff. I was like, you know what? If this was back then, he probably would have had a lot more input. It probably would have been better. You know, just like, I don't know. It just seems like it's taken away. They give it to people who don't give a shit, who just crank out, you know, movies for money, and just doesn't really matter. I didn't really care for it.
I will say IDW... Sorry to go back to the comics. IDW is known for licensing stuff, and they don't do a lot of, like, original material. So
yeah,
it'll be interesting to see. But one good thing to come out of this is that all the old stuff is finally going to be reprinted. So
yeah, I heard that from the press release, it said that they were going to be remastered. What does that mean? Just better prints?
Exactly. Like, they're probably going to, you know, do high quality scans, and you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, just put it on nice paper and not make them shitty. So, all right. So, since we're talking about turtles, Dave, tell us about this project you've got going on right now.
Well, the main thing, I mean, if I'm going to be totally honest, was that I was thinking, you know, I got to do something to promote myself. And then I was like, I just need to do stuff I love, because that's the only way you ever do good things. You do things that you enjoy a lot, and you get a lot of feedback, because it usually comes out a hell of a lot better than shit you hate. So I was like, all right, I'll do the fucking Ninja Turtles. Like, I was doing a study of a rhino, and I was like, I'll just turn this into Rocksteady. So then I just started painting in Rocksteady, and then I just went on from there, and then I started releasing them. And they started to get more popular, and I think by the time I did Shredder, it ended up on, like, a bunch of websites. It was on, like, Slash Film and BuzzFeed, and Reddit had it for, like, my April portrait.
Oh, you're...
And they just,
huh?
Yeah, just, I don't know, it just started to get, like, a lot of feedback all of a sudden, and then I was just, like, you know, after that, I was pretty excited to do it, because I was like, oh, cool, people actually want to see it. So, you know, at first I was just going to do Bebop and Rocksteady, but now I'm doing fucking everything, because it's just, like, so much fun, and it's just something on the side. And ever since I started selling prints for it, it's just been, you know, like, funding itself, basically. Like, I'm not trying to do it, you know, I can't do more than a limited run, because then I'd be making a business out of it, and then I'd probably get sued. But, yeah, I mean, I already sold out of, like, the Shredder, Rocksteady, April, like, I don't know. The rest of them are pretty close. Like, Splinter's almost sold out.
I've got one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, I got to pay you still.
Oh, yeah, you do. Son of a bitch. Well, anyways, yeah, I started doing that, but, yeah, I've been thinking about theme things. I'm going to do, like, G.I. Joe after this and a few more. Just have a lot of fun. You
yeah,
know.
Dave, obviously you're being interviewed right now by yours truly on the site, which will be published soon. So you definitely want to hear Dave talk more about Turtles and his project, which is seriously, you got to see these prints. Dave, check the site, comictech.net, for an interview. But Dave, where can they go for your blog to see your stuff?
You can just go to daveraposa.com. That's R-A-P-O-Z-A. And I have them all up there, and you can also purchase the prints through there.
Yeah, so who are you sold out of? Shredder, April, and Rocksteady?
Yeah, and I have like two more splinters left.
Ooh. And who are you adding to the list? Can you tell us? Or?
I haven't told anybody just because I like keeping it a secret. It's like as soon as you tell somebody your plans to do something, in your head you kind of think you've already done it because you think about it so much.
Sure.
So okay. That kind of kills it.
Fair enough. But I will say this. He's even done obscure characters like Slash so far. So that's
Slash from the adventure series you were talking about.
Yeah, and if I have one recommendation, I would love to see Ninjara. I don't think anybody would get it, but holy shit. Because she's a badass character, seriously. But anyway, all right, well, hey, Dave, thanks for coming on, man. Anything else you want to say?
No, thanks for having me on.
So thank you all out there for tuning in to our first ever episode of the Comics Dispatch, done through comicattack.net radio. Hope you come back and join us next week. We're not sure exactly when our podcast will post. It'll either be every Monday or Tuesday. So just check the site, comictech.net, to check us out. Also be sure to stay tuned for Dave's interview published on our site soon. And definitely check out his stuff because it is amazing. Seriously, it's going to blow you away. Also, if you enjoy this podcast, obviously tune in again, but also check out Tales from the Water Cooler, which is our review show, and some deep discussions with Decapitated Dan, which are interviews with a lot of creators in the comics biz. So good talking to you, kind of. Oh, and also be sure, please, if you have questions or suggestions or anything, send those to andy@comicattack.net. and daniel@comicattack.net, and we'll answer them on our next show. So hope you enjoyed it, and we'll see you next time.